Welcome to VChat. This is edition number 18, and my name's David Davis from VMwareVideos.com and TrainSignal.
And my name's Simon Seagrave from TechHead.co.uk.
And I'm Eric Siebert from vSphereLine.com.
Well, awesome, guys. It's great to be back with you again. We've got some great topics lined up for the show. First off, I want to talk about a tweet I saw from Simon where he said that he was at Mount Everest Base Camp. So, Simon, how the heck did you get to Mount Everest?
Nothing that glamorous, actually. It was a holiday trip. Tibet and Nepal are a place that I've always wanted to visit and travel to. Obviously, it's getting increasingly hard these days. So, it's a lifelong trip for me to head there. So, we spent 2 weeks in total, a few days in Nepal, but the majority in Tibet, visiting different Tibetan monasteries and seeing a lot of the local people and what have you. And then the real highlight of the trip was to actually travel to Everest Base Camp. We're really lucky, actually, because it's a funny time of the year to go because the weather's quite mixed. So the chances of us actually getting to see Everest were pretty, even from base camp, were pretty remote. So we were very lucky, actually. We got there, it was cloudy, but within sort of half an hour it started to clear. And by the evening and the sunset, it was just 100% clear. Got some amazing photos. The night was clear, and also the morning, for the sunrise in the morning, completely clear. Got some fantastic photos again, and then it started to cloud in, and started raining for about 2 days thereafter. Mm. So, probably for the once-in-a-lifetime trip there, very, very fortunate indeed. What was very interesting, however, I mean, I don't know whether you guys have ever traveled at altitude before. But even in the capital of Tibet, which is Lhasa there, even at that sort of altitude, which I think is around about 3,600 meters or thereabouts, the effect altitude has on your body is phenomenal.
We had
a lot of people in the... Exactly. You just got to drink the whole time your Diamox.
When you drink alcohol at altitude, you get drunk really fast.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of people continue to drink a couple of beers with meals and what have you, and they drop like flies within about 12 hours of arriving there. The headaches and just generally quite sick with altitude sickness.
Yep.
But the crazy thing is, you'd walk up, just a small flight of steps, and you'd be panting, like you'd just run a marathon.
Yeah.
In the subsequent days leading up to base camp, we got gradually increased the altitude we were traveling at. So we got to the base camp that was around about sort of 5,300 meters. And by that stage, luckily the body had acclimatized a little bit, but, I felt like a 90-year-old man when I was there. It was so tiring.
I live at 6,000 feet, and, once you get acclimated at that altitude, it's okay and that. And we actually have in Colorado, it's a big thing to climb the 14,000-foot mountains. There's about 50 of them here. There's actually one you can drive up all the way up to 14,000 feet, so you don't have to do all the heavy, the hard climbing and that. And that big change, you get people that go from, that just get here and go from zero sea level, where they initially came from, all the way up to 14,000, man, it just wipes some people out totally. Once you get acclimated, it's not bad, but it's those people that haven't been up to that altitude before and do it right away can have some problems.
Yeah, definitely. It can be quite dangerous, actually, as well. Sorry, what was that?
How did you even fly to Nepal? How did you even get there?
Oh, we flew there. Flew to Nepal and then, pretty much bust and with a little bit of trekking in there as well.
So I got to ask the question. Did you have your own V Sherpa?
V Sherpa, that make a pretty good T-shirt. No, I didn't. In that case, I had to carry my own bags. But luckily, we're traveling by coach most of the time.
So you're that close. Why not go to the top?
It's very tempting. I mean, it was interesting. So from base camp, there's three stops between there and the top. But the actual cost to actually travel to the top is around about sort of anywhere between sort of, $55,000 to about $85,000.
Oh, wow.
Just to get a permit to head up there.
Oh, just for the permit? Because you got to hire Sherpas and all that too?
Yeah, I think that includes, part of your expedition as well. But
okay.
It's definitely not cheap.
Okay,
definitely,
wow, I didn't know
definitely
that.
Not cheap.
Huh.
And doesn't it take like a month to for the whole process to get up and down?
I'm not sure. I could imagine it would, if not longer, actually. I'd imagine it'd probably take you longer just to acclimatize, you know.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they just built a tram where you could just take a tram up there now, you know, instead of doing all that climbing.
I tell you what, you're up there, though, and you couldn't be further away from technology. It's kind of crazy, apart from your... well, the crazy thing is up there, it's got a pretty strong mobile phone signal, which is mad, and obviously data as well, because that's where I got to send the tweet from. So, you know, the world's a bizarre place these days, where you can be in these rather extreme middle-of-nowhere places and still send a tweet.
So was it pretty cold up there, winter-like, or was it not bad?
No, well, it wasn't bad at all, actually. It's off-season at the moment, so a lot of the area where there would have been snow, there was no snow anymore.
Okay.
Temperature-wise, in the evening, it probably dropped down to sort of, in UK, about sort of 0 or -1.
Okay. Oh, cool. Kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities in that, so it sounds like it was fun, so...
Definitely. Came back from the holiday absolutely shattered, so it's actually, I'm feeling in much better shape now back at work than I did when I was on holiday, which is kind of ironic.
And what was with that mud fest you were at right after that?
Yeah, well, it was mad. You know, got back. A lot of people seem to think I was leading a bit of a rock and roll lifestyle there, but it's literally a case of just getting all my holiday out the way, because from here on in, for the next sort of 2-3 months, with preparing for the two VM worlds, it's going to be kind of crazy. I'm just going to be working pretty much the whole time. But the mud thing, that was the very famous Glastonbury Music Festival here in the UK. If you're in the UK, it's one of those events you have to go to at least once, but it's renowned for its bad weather, although it's summer here. For some reason, the weekend it falls on always seems to be full of sort of heavy downpours and rain.
Yeah, I saw your pictures, and it was just insane, like a sea of mud, and that it was like nuts.
Yeah, and those photos didn't really do it justice at all. It was just a quagmire of mud the whole time. Once again, it was good to get back home and actually rest up and get a decent night's sleep.
Cool.
Well, awesome. Awesome trips, man. So I guess let's get started talking about some technology. I wanted to talk about the new iOmega, the PX series. I know Simon and Eric, you guys both have one. I've got the older iX4, and I was interested in the PX. So I guess, Eric, tell us what you think about it. You go first.
I haven't got too deep into it yet. Basically, I got mine as a replacement for my iX. It's been having all those drive problems, and EMC was nice enough to replace my iX with a PX. So I have the 8-terabyte 4-drive unit. They come in several configurations. You can also get them in a 6-drive unit. And also, I think, Simon, is it 12 as well? For the PX?
No. There's the PX4, which is the 4-drive. PX6 was the 6-drive, and then you've got the rack mount model.
Oh, okay.
I think that's around about 8 or 10 drives, possibly 12. Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay. And you know, initial impression that I really like. It seems a lot more solidly built than the iX. The really nice thing is the door up front. You can take the drives right out. You no longer have to take the case off to pull them out. It's got really nice removable drives. Overall, it just seems a lot more solid. A lot more well built. I've been playing with the interface a little bit. The setup was pretty easy in that. There's a lot more features with it now with the new software. The new software is completely different from the iX software. It's got the built-in personal cloud software now. I haven't had a chance to try that yet. But overall, I love from what I've been doing with it so far, which isn't all that much. I just love it a lot more than the old iX. And I think the other big thing on there is it now comes driveless, so you can roll your own drive, so you don't have to be stuck with the drives they give you. And another thing I noticed in this as well is with the iX, you had those old Seagate slower drives, the 5200 RPM drives, or 54, whatever they were. With this one, they come with new Hitachi 7200 RPM drives, so this unit's geared around performance. There's one right there Simon's holding up. The P stands for performance. So basically, it's supposed to be higher performing. It's got more CPU, more memory than the iX. It's supposed to perform a lot better. And Simon's done a lot of performance testing with it that he's going to probably publish soon. I haven't really had a chance to yet, but I'd like to compare it against the iX to see where it's at. So, Simon, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Actually, I just looked it up, actually. The other PX, the rack mount we were speaking of there is actually a PX4, so it's a 4-drive rack mount model.
Okay.
There is still the IX12, which is a 12-drive model.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if we do see a PX12 going forward.
Right.
You know, as they phase out the IX range. But yeah, no, I feel like yourself, Eric. I found it a great little device. I've tried to hold off from using it or running VMs off of it as long as I could. Because I wanted to do the performance testing in it and what have you. But the temptation of actually throwing in a couple of SSD drives, which I've now done, was too great. So I've done that. I'm actually running most of my production environment off it now. One nice feature with it that you don't have with the IX, obviously you can use the SSDs as well as the SATA drives or a mixture of the two, but you've got storage pools in there. So for example, the way I've got it carved up at the moment, so I've got two SSDs in there, and also two terabyte SATA disks in there. So they're two separate storage pools. And then obviously, you know, I can run various VMs out of these various pools and what have you. So definitely a lot more flexibility there. A lot of the features and functionality are around it are very similar to the IX, but it is, if you've got one of the older IX editions, it is running the new Cloud Edition, which has some very nice new features in it. You know, for example, if you want it for a home device, it's got a lot of hooks into social media, various services such as, you know, your Facebooks and Flickr and things like that. And one feature I quite like around it, and actually there's something maybe we could test between our devices here, Eric, is actually the remote backup.
Okay.
So what I'm able to do here is actually specifies some particular directories or volumes or shares on the device here and actually replicate it or encrypt it and replicate it with another PX or IX device running the Cloud Edition somewhere else on the, over the internet. Like I say, it's all encrypted. It sends it securely. So a scenario, for example, I could have a particular directory here with all my photos and I could back it up to Eric's PX device, for example, and he could do it the same as well. So, you know, obviously, off-site backups, definitely a good thing.
Direct backups to Mozy. It's got direct backups to Amazon S3 and Time Machine as well. So it's pretty robust backups. You knew, obviously, they were going to get Mozy in there at some point. It's good to see that that's integrated now and that. So lots of good backup options as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's something I'd like to try out. For running your VMs off it so far, like you say, Eric, I've run a number of iometer performance tests on it. I've just got to compile all the results off of that, which I'll be doing hopefully this weekend. But been quite impressed with the performance off there, especially off the SSD. As you'd imagine, it's very, very responsive indeed. I'm just using an NFS at the moment, but found that quite good. And as with the IX devices as well, it's fully VMware certified as well. So you know that it's going to be running with the current edition 4.1 of or before of ESX or ESXi, which is definitely a good thing.
When is VAAI coming for it?
VAAI, I don't know. Probably never. Well, to be honest, I don't think you'll probably ever see it because of the processing power required
exactly.
for that. But, I mean, talking of processing power, it's definitely got a lot more horsepower under the hood. For a start, it's a dual-core Atom-based processor in there. The memory, depending on the model you have, is about twice or four times the amount found in the IX. And it's that extra horsepower via the CPU and the memory that allows it to actually use SSDs. So with the IX model, there were quite a few people out there, including myself, always quite liked the idea of running SSDs in your IX and gave it a go, but it just never worked. And the reason for that, it never just had the SSDs just saturated the processing power of the IX unit. Great to be running some SSDs finally in there now.
Now, the one thing I noticed is if you're used to buying the IX4, this one is more expensive in that the base model with no drive, typically you could get a 4-terabyte IX4 for around $600 to $700. The list price on the driveless model, the PX, is $799. So it is, you know, obviously you're getting more, and that's to be expected. It's going to cost more. So it might be out of reach of some of the people putting in home labs and that. But the good thing is you can roll your own drive, so maybe you buy the unit and then gradually add drives to it and that. It comes in 0-terabyte, 4-terabyte, 8-terabyte, and 12-terabyte pre-configured models where you can put all the way up to 3-terabyte drives in there and get 12 terabytes, or you can just go out and buy your own drives and put them in there and kind of scale it however you like.
Yeah, one thing just to point out around that, at the time of recording this, I know there's two particular models of SATA disk and one particular type of SSD that you can officially use in there.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's not a case of just throwing any old drive in there. I mean, you can do, and to be honest with you, 99% of the time, it's probably going to... It's probably going to work. I've got a link on my site there in the link section. So anyone wanting to look that up, just check it out there. But most drives will work in there. It'll come down to support. So for example, let's say you have an issue with one of the drives or it starts doing something a bit funky. If you contact support, they'll soon pick up that you're running non-supported drives in there and. Depending, they may decide not to support it because it is not on the HCL.
Oh, wow.
I'd imagine over time you'll probably see the HCL list probably increase in size as the product sort of matures and is out in the market.
Those Hitachi drives that they give you seem decent. You know, at least the R7200 RPM, they're the better class, better RPM speed drives. So,
yeah.
But if you buy it with drives, it gets kind of pricey because I think it was the... The 4 terabyte model is, I can't remember where it was here. I think it was like around, $1,199. The 8 terabyte model is $2,299, and the 12 terabyte model is $2,999. So that gets pretty pricey, and I imagine it's cheaper. That's list price through the online retailers and that. But if you start, getting the larger models, it does get up there in price.
Yeah, I mean, around the costing there, I haven't announced it as yet, but hey, why not do it now? What I've managed to arrange with the folks at iMega, because I've been quite really impressed with the, with the device, and obviously with it being part of the EMC, I've got some relationships with the folks at iMega, the great bunch of people. They've actually agreed to give me a discount code that I can pass on to people for actually a very generous 20% off the PX devices
great, until
the end of September.
Wow.
So it's actually valid from the 1st of July, so by the time you listen or watch this, I'm guessing it'll be in effect. So from the 1st of July to the end of September, there's a discount code where you can get 20% off. Now, as of this point in time, it's for UK sales only, hoping to get US sales, a discount code for the folks in the US and hopefully Europe as well. So watch the space on that, but I've definitely got a discount code for the UK listeners at the moment. So to get that discount code, just visit my site, click on the top under the hot deals section. I've got the discount code up there. So any savings such as 20% can only be a good thing. So for those people teetering, it may be enough to take the plunge.
Yeah, because us people that are building home labs don't have, in a lot of cases, huge budgets to work with. So I definitely recommend this unit. It's a really nice unit, and you'll be really happy with it. It's very well built, and hopefully they continue to improve the software that's built into it. I'm sure they'll add stuff to it and refine it. But definitely worth getting for your home lab.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see where they take it because there's obviously a lot more functionality in with the cloud edition of the OS running on there.
Yeah.
But, around the back, for example, actually I've got mine here. Excuse the messy desk. There is actually, as you can probably see, I've actually already taken the cover off and tried putting a PCIe network card in there. But there is a PCIe slot on there, which was never there with the IX device. So I kind of suspect they might have something up their sleeve for future expansion, perhaps. So I'm not privy to that information, unfortunately, but I think the potential's there for some pretty cool things going forward.
And one other cool thing is it's got one USB 3.0 port in that, so you can actually start to use USB storage connected to that, where 2.0 is kind of slow to even use. 3.0 definitely, ups the ante there and gets you more speed.
Yeah, and the other thing is as well, I must admit, as soon as I got it, I had the side off of the system board out and what have you to actually have a look at what's under the hood. But interesting enough, it uses the small, laptop-sized DIMMs, DDR3 DIMMs in there.
Oh, okay.
It occupies one socket, but there's actually a spare socket in there as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For additional memory
gig.
As well. So
it comes with 2 gig right now, where the old IX2 came with 256 meg, and I think the IX4 came with 512. So a lot more memory. That's good.
If you threw extra DIMMs in there, I mean, it would probably use it for caching and things like that, which would be
that'd
quite
be
useful. I know with the iX 12, for example, I've actually I've upped the memory in that previously in the big rack mount version, and by adding extra DDR memory DIMMs in there, it actually increased the memory available through to the operating system. And going in the back door, the support port method, I could see that the OS was actually using this additional memory that you're presenting through to it. So once again, some good potential there, you know, for the
you found the support hole for this one, where on the old one you went to that support.html page, but that doesn't work on this one. Is there another support backdoor?
No. I've tried that myself, actually. I've tried telnetting in, SSHing in, using all the old backdoor tricks that works with the iX, but no, it looks like they've changed it.
I'm sure it's there. It's just a matter of finding it. Maybe I better call up with a problem and have them give them to me.
Yeah, I should ask around, actually. They probably won't tell me, but there's bound to be one, I'm sure.
Yeah, cool. Great.
Cool. So what about the VNX? Simon, what's the latest on that? I heard there's some kind of simulator.
Yeah, we were talking about it the other day, weren't we? It's the VSA, so... there's always been a Celera VSA, an Uber VSA that Nick Weaver basically repackaged up, streamlined, made it a lot faster, a lot easier for people to use. And Nick's done a great job and actually taken the next iteration of that, the VNX, re-Uberized it and sent that out. We've started using a lot in a lot of our sort of hands-on labs or lab environments now for people to get hands-on time with the appliance, for example. And I've been using it quite a bit recently. I've got a webcast that I'll be doing, when is it, early August, on how to install and configure the VNX. I did one on the Celera VSA a while back, which proved quite popular. So I'm just updating that a little bit with some of the new features, the new interface, what have you, for the VNX. So, great little VSA, free to download again. Just visit Nick's site, Nickopedia, do a Google on that, and VSA and Uber, and it's normally at the top of the search results there. So definitely check it out. You know, if you're looking for a virtual storage appliance for your home lab, it's definitely worth checking out. As for those like OpenFiler.
So it's actually a VNX VSA.
Yeah. So it's if you can imagine a virtualized, the code that runs on the VNX storage appliance itself, it's a virtualized instance of that. It is limited in a couple of aspects in as much that this particular version is NFS, so file only, so you don't get block level. For most lab environments, NFS is more than sufficient. And it just means that, you know, if you're an EMC shop, for example, or you're looking at doing your certifications or education with the VNX or one of the EMC products, it's great. It means you can get hands-on time at home or on your laptop type of thing, because the interface is all exactly the same. You can create NFS storage or shares, rather, and present it through to an ESX or ESXi host and actually run VMs off it as well. So, I mean, that's what we do for the hands-on labs, and works great.
Cool.
So it's got that pretty VNX interface. Like, you don't have that Unisphere interface or something that you have with the
Navisphere
VSA?
Interface? Navisphere's long gone, thank goodness.
Okay.
No, it's a new shiny Unisphere interface. Definitely a lot more intuitive, a lot more user-friendly, and a lot more eye candy there as well. So, a lot nicer to use.
Cool. I'll have to check it out. When's your webinar again?
Early August. I think it's the first or second week of August. I'll put something up on my blog. If not, check out the webinar page on the EMC site.
Cool. So, Eric, I heard you guys had the big Denver regional VMUG yesterday.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It went great. We had a pretty good turnout, and then we had I think at least 250 people show up. We had lots of vendors there. We had some great speakers. The keynote, the morning keynote, was Scott Harrell from Quest, who did an awesome session, which I think he's going to publish a slide soon on basically kind of adjusting to the virtual data center. It really wasn't a product pitch at all. It was all about, you know, how you deal with virtualization inside your data center. Really good session. Really impressed by it. Scott Lowe did a great, an awesome session as well on networking design, and that with kind of answering a lot of the common questions that you get with networking design. How many NICs should I use? How many should I use a standard switch, distributed vSwitch, and all that? So another really good session. We had lots of great vendors there. It was set up, you know, in a way where we had a whole kind of like a solutions exchange of our own, where it was a one big room that had the vendor tables ringing around the outside of the room with all the tables where people could sit and, you know, eat at in the middle of the room and that. So set up really well. The My VMUG people, that new team that they have that kind of took this over, just, I can tell you how impressed I was with how smoothly they ran that thing. They coordinated everything. We didn't really, you know, I'm one of the VMUG leaders. You know, we had to make some of the decision making things on, you know, content and sponsors and that, but as far as running it, we were pretty hands off, and they pretty much handled everything, all the logistics of that event, and it just ran so smoothly in that. They even had the new high tech where you actually can walk up to the laptop, put your name in, it pulls up your information and prints your badge for you, and you just stick it in your thing. They had the scanners for the vendors so the vendors could scan badges, all that. So it was an awesome event, and you know, I know they're doing these in other cities as well. If you don't have one coming to your city, I would suggest, you know, to contact the VMUG team, and they can definitely arrange that to get one in your city and that. Just overall, a really great event.
Cool. And Scott wore his new Aussie barbecue hat.
He did. Scott Harold was very proud of. He was up in Boulder, Colorado, and he found that hat at a store in Boulder, and was actually wore it during the session just to impress Andy Mann from CA, who's an Aussie and also lives in Boulder, and that. And so he was proudly showing that hat off during the VMUG.
So what was that hat?
I'll post a link to it.
Yeah, it's I took a picture of it too, and I tweeted it, and that it's just one of those kind of Aussie outback hats that you wear, and that he called it his grilling hat, you know, where Andy corrected him. They don't grill in Australia. It's a Barbie.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, talking of cool things, check out this rather fishing shirt here, sort of a pork barbecue. Those of you from the South in the U.S.
It's got the pig butt on the back there.
What was that?
It's got the pig butt on the back.
There you go.
Yeah.
So thanks to David for sending that across to me. I was working across in North Carolina pre-EMC world, and I've never had so much sort of pork barbecue for lunch and dinner before. I never knew pork was such a big thing, so David kindly sent me over the shirt that's quite well known over there. So wearing it with pride now.
All right. That's awesome. You're big on the pig. That's what they say.
Big on the pig. Yeah, that's what it says on the back. So, I'd never heard of that before, but yeah.
Well, cool. So, Eric, what about HP Discover? I know you went to that recently. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, it seemed similar to VMworld. It was actually at the same venue that VMworld was several years ago in Las Vegas, with the Venetian and that. So it felt, you know, really comfortable to me because I already been in that setting before. Everything was kind of laid out the same. The solution exchange was in the same area and that. It was good. They, you know, HP brought a bunch of bloggers down. There was probably about 20 of us that they kind of all expense paid us to come in there. You know, every single expense from airfare, transportation, food, the works. And they really took care of us and made sure that we got all the information that we needed. They had their own bloggers lounge. They had a coffee table talk set up on a schedule and that, where they'd bring in, you know, like engineers from HP to talk about some technology. They'd bring in, you know, some of the executives to talk about things and that, and just in an informal setting and that, you know, just, you know, sitting around a table asking questions and that, and it was really good. It was, you know, they had session-wise an unbelievable, I think, too many sessions. They had, I think, close to 900 sessions in that, which is, you know, that's just kind of crazy to try to figure out a schedule with that many sessions and that. It runs longer than VMworld typically does, so it was spread over across 5 days from Monday to Friday. But overall, it was a really good time. It was I enjoyed looking at all the HP technology that they had on the show floor. They were introducing their new virtual system, which is kind of a, you know, their answer to the FlexPod or the VBlock and that. So it's you know, saw a lot of the great.
So what? Are, Yeah, what is that, Eric? I mean, I haven't heard of that. Obviously, they've been running them at, you know, HP have had their Matrix offering for the last, you know, couple of years now. Is it based on the Matrix, or is it sort of a variation on that?
It's different, and you know, that was one of the things I asked too, because when they initially announced it at HP Discover, I'm like, what is this? And that there's not a lot of information on what the components are and all that, so I was a little bit confused on what it was. So, you know, from what I found out a little bit more information afterwards, and they're going to be doing more kind of webinars and white papers on it. But, you know, it's basically a pre-configured system that is, you know, comes with certain HP servers and storage and networking. And you also have your choice of, right now it supports Hyper-V or vSphere and that to put on it. So it's basically just their bundled system and that. I didn't really know the technical deals too much. I need to dig into it more once they release more information on it. It seemed like at HP Discover it was just kind of the announcement, but not too much detail about it, and I'm trying to run down one of the product managers for that line and couldn't hook up with him to find out more about it, so hopefully I'll find out more about that later on.
I'm guessing it's going to be based on the C-Series blade enclosure, a rebranded, one of the three COM switches. It'll be interesting to see what storage they match with it, whether they go as low as the sort of MSA range or whether they're going to go in with left hand or maybe a three-power offering.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not MSA, I know that. I thought it might be the P4000 line, but I can't remember exactly. I know they're really trying to integrate the three-power stuff in as well to a lot of their offerings as, you know, primarily one of their primary VMware vSphere storage devices. So we'll kind of see once I get more details on where that goes. But it'll be interesting to see and how they integrate. I know they do have a lot of integration from a software standpoint as well with all the stuff you can get for the Insight control and that, where you can integrate into vCenter plugins and all that as well. And that. So I've been playing with that a little bit lately. So, I'm anxious to learn more about it and see what it is and capabilities and all that. So, of course, as well, there was a really big focus on WebOS at HP Discover, obviously, because they're coming out with their new tablet, the touchpad. And that was pretty impressive. I must say that I'd definitely be tempted to go with that. I think it's a worthy competitor to the iPad, and that, you know, where the Android, I have the Android, one of the Android, the Galaxy Tabs, haven't been impressed with that at all. But the touchpad, it's just so slick. They did an awesome job with it. They took their time. They integrated it well. And, you know, it may not have the app ecosystem of the iPad, but everything else on it is good enough that it kind of can offset that. It's very usable. I think the app will come now that a big company like HP is behind this device, and especially it'll probably be pretty strong in the consumer market and that. So I think they did an awesome job with this touchpad, and I look forward to getting hold of one and trying it out and comparing it to the iPad.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I've seen some of the initial reviews around it that have come out over the last couple of days, and they've definitely spoken of it quite favorably. I was wondering whether it was going to be a bit of, you know, another lemon on the announcement, but people are actually, you know, they're serious in their reviews when they're actually comparing it with an iPad. I think the iPad's still got the eye candy factor to it, but from what I gather, the WebOS itself is the real selling point with it. Apparently, it's very, very slick, and it actually does a couple of things that's better than apparently what the iPad does. So,
well,
it's going to be interesting.
It does multitasking. The iPad doesn't do that. You know, the programs in the background, the iPad sleep. It's not a true multitasking OS. And the browsing, I heard, is a lot better. The tab browsing that you use in the on the web OS and that. And so I think it's, you know, I think it's going to integrate better into the enterprise, you know, with HP's backing behind it, and you know, into Windows, where, you know, Apple is focused on Apple products. Like, for example, you can't FaceTime on an iPad to a Windows computer, which I find a big problem because I don't know a lot of people with Apple devices that I can connect to. So I think, you know, the integration is going to be better, you know, from the Windows side, and where, you know, you should be able to do more with it and have video conferencing and things like that. So so I'm really anxious
I think the big thing would be the development community around it. So, I mean, that's what Apple has really got behind it, is the whole development community. And you've got such a breadth and quality of products out there. And I think if HP can do something similar with the WebOS, you know, from a virtualization point of view, it'd be interesting to see whether, you know, if it does take off, whether there's going to be a port of the, you know, the vSphere client, or, you know, probably unlikely at this stage, but, you know, if there was a Vue client, or, you know, if Wise port their, you know, their thin client software across to it.
Yeah, definitely. So, I look forward to seeing how it progresses.
I think that would be the make or break.
Yep.
Yeah.
Speaking of the vSphere client, the new one's out for the iPad, the update, just came out
1.1,
the other day. It really doesn't do any more functionality. It's a lot of bug fixes in that. You need the new vCMA, so don't upgrade it until you upgrade your CMA on the back end. You know, they've... Hopefully, they say there's more feature stuff in the works, so, you know, obviously I think people want more than anything vMotion, being able to vMotion a VM, which is handy, and then I think the other second biggest requested feature is the remote console, being able to put a console on a VM and that, so hopefully they, you know, start adding more features to it and develop it a little bit more and get it more usable, because today, you know, I just don't find it, the limited functionality just doesn't really make it all that robust to use on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's definitely more about the eye candy at this stage, I think. But it was interesting. I mean, there are a few good little additions with 1.1. I mean, if they continue to develop it, and like you say, get some of this real core functionality that people are screaming out for with it, such as the vMotion, for example,
yeah.
I think they're going to be onto a winner there, sort of long term. But
yeah.
Obviously, they've got to keep plugging away at it, keep adding the features and the minor releases to keep people's interest in it.
Yeah, definitely. So, David, we got invited to a special event coming up, huh?
Yeah, July 12th. You know, VMware is having a big webinar. Something big is in the works from Steve Herrod and Paul Moritz are going to be on there. And, yeah, you and I, Eric, are going to be in the room live, I guess, watching them make whatever the big announcement might be.
Yeah, the Part 5 thing kind of hinted towards something, so... Well, I know they're not allowed to speak a lot about it. They're legally bound where they can't go into details about it. So that's why they've kind of been intensely vague on what it is. I think most people can put two and two together to figure it out. They're encouraging people to sign up to this, the webinar. If you go to VMware's website, there's a big link on the front page to it and that I encourage you to go there and sign up. Should be really good. I found surprising it's actually where the last one they did for vSphere was in Palo Alto at the headquarters. It's not there. They're doing it in San Francisco at, I forget the name of that place. It's kind of like a gallery place, Terra something, kind of almost like the Apple type of format where it'll be, you know, a lot of press people there. Not many bloggers. I think me, David, Bill Hill, and Bob Plankers were the only bloggers they invited. But they want to get a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement. And I think people really find this to be a very exciting announcement. You know, obviously we can't go into details in it, but it's definitely worth watching. I think they're also, in addition to the general session that both Paul and Stephen will be doing, they will also be doing a lot of kind of breakout sessions afterwards on various, you know, features and functionality as well that should be good as well. So encourage everybody to watch that. Me and David, we're going to try to do a VChat out there, and we might have a very special guest for that. So stay tuned and definitely go register.
Definitely. I mean, I think kind of the clue, like you say, could be in the name there. I mean, they're advertising it as called Raising the Bar Part 5.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of putting two and two together. I'm thinking the 2012 coming up with the Olympics. I think what's happening is Paul Moritz and Steve Herrod are announcing they're entering a VMware high jumping team into the Olympics, hence the title Raising the Bar. So I kind of suspect maybe could be something like that, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, and just to add one other thing, that it's going to be more than people expect. They're probably expecting a certain announcement to come out, but there's more to it than that, so it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait. I'm bringing my video camera. We're going to try to do a VChat.
Yeah,
I'm
definitely
going to try to interview anybody I can get my hands on. And, I was hoping it was going to be in Palo Alto, like the last announcement was. But still, I may go down to Palo Alto right after the event and see if I can, you know, just walk in the VMware front door and try to get somebody on video to talk about the new announcement. So
yeah, definitely.
Should be a lot of fun.
Should be a good time.
Yeah, I'll post a link to the webinar to register, you know, right below the VChat here once it's posted. So,
cool.
So let's see, what else? VExpert. I haven't heard if I'm a VExpert yet. You guys have any news?
Yeah, by the time you listen to this,
I think
They'll already be announced. When John Troyer was actually at the Denver VMUG, and he had all the results on his laptop there. So it was just a matter of him getting the mail merged. They don't have a file okay. machine system to do it. It's a lot of manual piecing together things. Of him getting the mail merged to work from from Word to send out all the emails to get those sent out. So it's done. All the judging. They had a panel of judges this time, which why it took longer. That he had to wait to get all the responses back from the judges. I think he said they had about 600 people apply. About 300 were the final approval. And they're opening up the program a little bit more. There's more benefits than that. He's been kind of behind on this, so the gifts from last year I think are going to go out real quick, and the gifts from this next, the 2011, will also go out real quick. So he's doing a lot of catch up. The directory is finally live as well, the VExpert
Oh, really?
Directory. Where you can actually see who the VExperts are. Before, you kind of had to rely on word of mouth or people posting on their blogs and they had to find out. So that'll be posted as well, where people can go in and enter their own information and that. So look for it soon. Like I said, it's probably already out by the time you're listening to this. So congratulations to all those that made it.
Yeah, there's going to be a big VExpert event, I know, Sunday night before VMworld.
Yeah, 3 to 6.
With Steve Harrod and John Troyer. And
yep.
What's
so,
that?
It's from 3 to 6 on that Sunday, so travel okay. early if you're planning on going to that. It's going to be, traditionally it was on, Tuesday last year that we had it?
Yeah.
So, it was on about Tuesday, yeah.
They're trying to avoid other things, so it's going to be on Sunday right before the VMware Underground Party, so it'll be 3 to 6. So, you might want to adjust your travel plans to be able to come in a little bit early to attend that. VMworld this year will be formally starting on Monday. The keynote, Paul Moritz, is going to be at 3 o'clock on that Monday. It's not going to be Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want to get there, before previous VMworlds. Monday was more of partner day and developer days and that. Not anymore. It's going to be formally starting on that Monday. And then there'll be other keynotes throughout the week. I think Stephen Harrod is on Tuesday, and then there'll be another smaller one on Wednesday, and I think they're going to do a fun one again on Thursday.
Oh, cool. I'm excited about the VM Underground Party. Train Signal is going to be a sponsor, and, this year they've got the whole it's not the Thirsty Bear. What's it called? In Las Vegas?
Of course it's Vegas, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's Vegas now.
I know the place you mean.
Was it an Irish bar or something that did it?
Irish bar.
Yeah, okay, that was down the street or something?
Nine Fine Irishmen.
Okay, yeah. They did it there years ago, I think. A small one.
Yeah, so this year they've got both floors. They've got the whole place. So okay. It'll be a lot more people. I think like 500, 300 to 500 people or something. It's going to be really big.
Yeah, should be
cool. That's pretty cool.
Should be good.
I imagine details on that will be coming out relatively soon. I'll talk to the guys and see whether we can get it published up onto the vbiz.org site as well. So it'll be
cool. Yeah, should be fun.
We'll publicize it as much as we can.
Yeah. So speaking of VMworld, Kendra Coleman and I will be talking about free tools again this year. And so we've started reviewing, the different free tools that are out there. And there's actually some really cool new free tools like VM Turbo's monitor, which I was playing with this week. It's like a virtual machine that you import, and it's got some really nice performance, related features for a free tool.
Oh, cool.
Zangati also did a new release of their product.
Yeah.
And
I saw that.
They improved the installation, and they've got health scores and stuff. So we'll also be looking at a lot of the new VMware Labs stuff. They've put out a lot of new VMware Labs. Yeah, Flings recently. So we've been trying to incorporate a lot more videos in the presentation this year to make it that much more exciting. So
great.
If there's any So if there's any vendors out there, send me an email. Send Kendrick an email. Let us know about your products. We want to, talk about all the free stuff we can. So
There's some pretty good stuff out there now. Like you say, the Zangati is now free or is free. Got to check that out at some stage. And definitely the amount of Flings the Fling team are producing now definitely ramped up a lot over the last couple of months, which is really good to see.
Yeah, I'm going to have to incorporate that VNX VSA, into the presentation, because I think that's a really cool free tool.
Yeah, I mean, it's free. As with the plugins, actually, the vCenter plugins work with it as well. So, you know, you can get the full end-to-end experience and manage the whole thing via the vCenter interface. So even more free stuff, which is always good. We like free.
Yeah, free is good.
Yeah, so next Wednesday, I'm sorry, it may be already passed by the time we post this, but TrainSignal will be releasing a VCA desktop training course by Brian Knudsen. Brian's a VCP. He's a VMUG leader in Nebraska, and he's one of those guys who've been to VMworld, I don't know how many times, like every one of the VMworlds.
Okay.
Anyway.
He always seems to be there.
yeah. Brian's come up with a good Vue desktop sort of administration training course for that new VCA desktop certification, which I'm excited about because it doesn't require you to take a VMware, you know, education course. So that's cool compared to the
VCP.
Cool. And then, yeah. And then Jason Nash and Lane Leverett have been working on a security course for us. So I'm excited to see that too. I've just started watching some of their training. So. Cool
stuff. Pretty good. Does that include vShield?
Yeah, they will be talking about vShield. I don't know that they'll go, you know, in depth. I mean, I don't know how advanced it will be, I should say, because, mm-hmm. you know, vShield's, man,
it's a big product.
You could make a 10-hour training course on vShield. Yeah. Yeah, but I think they'll provide a good, you know, introduction and give you everything you need to know about the vShield product related to the VCA the VCA, you know, certification.
Oh,
so the
cool.
stuff that's on the blueprint is kind of what they're trying to cover.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Definitely one to look out for there, or two to look out for.
Yeah, so what else, guys? What else have you been up to?
Other stuff. I've been trying to get time to blog as much as I can, but it's been kind of tough again.
We're
ramping up for VMworld now. EMC World finished a few weeks off. And straight into VMworld now, so it's kind of crazy. Ran a competition. These may look familiar to you, there, David. ran a competition on the website there. Had some great entries come in, and the winners have been picked. So I'm sending those out to the winners in the next day or so. But yeah, just trying to get time to work, you know, to blog in the evenings and weekends and everything, and. Yeah, like I mentioned, got a few posts around the iAmiga PX coming up, and a few other goodies as well, so, yeah.
Cool, I used one of your blog posts, by the way, recently. I got a new HP ML1 10G6, and I tried to put some of the fastest RAM, I guess, available in it, and it didn't like that RAM very much, and so I made one of your blog posts about how it's very particular about the type of RAM. So even though the RAM I had met the HP, you know, the specifications as to what it would take, it still didn't work. And of course, HP said, well, you have to put HP RAM in it.
That's what I used to
an expense, but, yeah.
But I read one of your blog posts and found out the speed of RAM that you're using in yours, and you said that some people had problems, and so I've actually ordered that particular RAM to try in mine, so...
Yeah. There's a number of the Kingston. There's a few models of the Kingston, and also the Corsair RAM that work in it. So yeah, you've got to be a little bit careful on there. But you know, once it's in, once you've got the model that works, it's been fine. Actually, my G6 is my main machine here in my lab, and it's on 24/7. And touch wood, it hasn't missed a beat so far. The only incidents I've had recently is actually in my iX, which has been running solidly for 2 years. I had a drive fail in that recently, but contacted iAmiga and swapped the drive out now. But luckily everything's continues to tick along, and it's a good little unit, actually. Actually, here in the UK, HP have been running an offer on the 110 G6 on the Xeon model. It's been about £100 cash back, so, if you're in the market, you're in the UK for one, definitely check that out, because they make great little lab machines, or even for the SMB or remote office space, they're pretty good.
They're good.
Yeah, I got it up to 12 gigs, and it was screaming, you know, with vSphere. It just seems so fast. So I should have it up to 16 gigs when I get the new RAM in, and it's going to be a good machine. So.
Yeah, I've got 16 in mine at the moment, and I am running some pretty heavy lifting VMs in there at the moment for the EMC lab work I'm doing. But yeah, I've got two VNX VSAs running there. I've got 8-9 VMs running in there. Pretty much maxed out the 16 gigs in there, but, you know, the quad-core CPU Xeon on there is more than handling it, and got it all running off the SSDs on the iMega, and, yeah, it's running well, actually. Running quite smoothly.
Cool. Anything else to add, guys, before we close up?
No. I've got my latest read here, actually.
Oh, yeah, I got that, too. Good book.
Yeah, Power CLI, VMware vSphere Power CLI reference. So, Luke Deakins, Alan Renouf, Glenn Sizemore, Armin van Lieschout, and Jonathan Med. Great book. Like you see, it's the size of a small house, and probably will take me a number of weeks to try and wade through. I've had a flick through. It looks a really good read. Definitely very comprehensive, and they've got a ton of scripts in there. So it's the type of thing, even for a reference book, you know, if you can find a script that they've already put in there that you can sort of dip in and out and, teach yourself a bit of Power CLI along the way, definitely looks quite useful. So that's my latest read at the moment.
Cool. I'll have to check it out. Well, I know Eric's going to take off on vacation.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll wrap this one up. I appreciate your time, guys. It's been awesome.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, great.
It's been smashing. Is that what they say, Simon? Smashing?
not anymore, unless you're very uncool. No. But we can say smashing. We can be uncool. We're geeks, you know.
Okay.
So have a smashing time. Right.
Yeah. Thank you for watching this episode of VChat, the latest in virtualization and cloud computing news and how-to. Eric, Simon, and David want your feedback, so send questions or ideas for future VChat topics to vchat@trainsignal.com.